This one we can add to the collusion.
No, just say, hey, long time no see, thanks for being here. Right? How'd it go this morning with your panel?
Really good.
Good. Okay, did you get a good job?
Yeah.
Good. Go right ahead.
Okay, so we're looking at the 27% of Utah employers that had some benefit costs in the last 4 years. Let's go to the next slide for the overall tax rate calculation. So what this means with our trust fund balance coming in over the maximum adequate level is if we take an example of an employer that has that same ratio of benefit liabilities to total interest. And then we just change the reserve factor from a 1.0 multiplier to a 0.9 because now we're in this healthy place. We're automatically going to self-adjust based on the statute. This doesn't require any legislative changes. We have to couple that with a potential increase in the taxable wage rate. Wages have increased. Historically, we've gone anywhere from 1.4 to 2.9% increase in wages each year. So if we lower the reserve factor, we increase the taxable wage rate. Then this example employer would end up paying about $30 less per employee, just based on the self-regulation of the trust fund calculation. So for about a quarter of Utah employers, they can expect an automatic tax decrease just because of the health care trust fund. Of course, each company is going to be unique in their ratio. When we look at their liability with benefit costs, we do a 4-year look back. 2016, we were looking at 2012 to 2015. When we calculate it for next year, it's going to move forward a year from 2013 to 2016. So if an employer had lower unemployment benefits in 2016 than they did in 2012, they'll experience an additional increase with the user factor decrease. So overall, it's looking pretty good for those that quarter of employers' benefit cost liability. Any questions on that last part? Then let's focus back on the 3/4 of employers that already qualify for the minimum tax rate. So we'll go to the next slide. We're projecting that minimum tax rate of 0.002 is going to remain the same. That coupled with the increase in the taxable wage rate, we would anticipate anywhere from a $1 to $2 increase per employee for those entities. Now, it's interesting, on your agenda, there was a little table at the bottom that talks about the status of the unemployment insurance program. When we look at the most recent 12 months, we collected about $256 million in tax revenue. When we compare that to the same time in 2015, we had collected $320 million. So the contribution rate formula is automatically self-regulating to decrease the employer liability. That coupled with the improving economy, the improving health of our trust fund, we're in a pretty good spot right now. So overall status of the fund, we're going to go ahead and go to the UN trust fund balance projections, the blue and red lines. And this is a graph that we've been using for quite a few years now, so y'all are most likely familiar with this graphic. Based on the self-regulation contribution rate formula, we are expecting to see a slight decrease in the trust fund balance in the next year. And that's just because we are in such a healthy spot. We anticipate that over the next year, we're going to go back into that min-max range based on the decrease in regular factor.
What goes into the projections for that, Sean?
Because we'll be assessing, I guess, with the $30 less per employee in that example of employers have unemployment liability, we'll be collecting less. So we've seen a fairly steady benefit level payment between last year and this year, about $122 million. But we have seen that decrease in the revenue collected because of the adjustment to the tax rate formula.
The overall fund will not decrease in terms of the dollar amount, though.
The dollar amount will go down a bit, and that's because we'll continue to pay out benefits while we're collecting less amount of money. But we anticipated that decrease is going to rather than If we seem to continue trends with this year compared to last year, it will be a pretty steady about 172 million.
So about the same as last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we seem to be kind of in this pattern. Although, if depending on the state of the economy, I know that in talking to our labor market team, their inclination is Utah's in a healthy spot. We've got a diversified economy. We have a lot of workforce development and generation happening. If something were to happen to the economy, it would likely be outside of Utah's control, more at a national level when you might see some of those resources like that.
So you expect the contribution collected to actually dip below 172?
Contribution collected, not to dip below 172, but to dip below what they've
low employment and increase in wage.
I think the
Yeah, that usually naturally occurs.
Naturally.
Especially drive the waivers up.
We're seeing that. It's kind of that cannibalistic approach to the workforce development.
It took a bit. It was a little sluggish to start to move, but now it's just moving in the direction that everybody wants to move. So, waivers are going up.
We're going to do the job creation numbers.
Yeah, 3.5% in the job growth the last month compared to the year before. So we're still at the top of the country with our job creations in all industries except government. So that's always a good sign that all of them have increasing jobs.
So something with almost 6%, according to the numbers I heard earlier, what would that be? I thought there was 6% job growth. Is that must be a different measure. 3.5%.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the 6% is. Well, it could have been as a higher. I mean, construction, I think, is one of those that is a higher growth than others. And so as the pie, it could be.
Maybe that's what
it
makes
it.
What is the national average?
I don't know that number off the top of my head. I'm going to grab that.
Of course, it's 2%. 2%. 3.4 is almost double.
I just say that because that's what everybody tells me. I was meeting this morning with a young electric sign company, and they said if we could hire 20 welders today, we'd hire this.
And 200 carpenters and 100 operators.
Right. Well, that guys, and the carbon fiber guys. So you start to crank those kids out.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get back into
your
agenda.
Are you going way back to the welcome, or where are you going? Did you make it? Okay. So what about approval? We're going to do that.
I don't believe we
got a quorum.
Okay. Get that. Let's see. Major activities within workforce services. So. I don't even know where to start. I'll start with probably the one that's consumed most of my time over the summer months, and that's the transition of the Utah State Office of Rehabilitation to Workforce Services. So I blame Steve Jardine, behind you, for giving me my summer. But yeah, the legislature elected to move USOR into DWS effective October 1st. Those of you that have experienced mergers in the past, they're a lot of work, a whole lot of work to execute on those effectively. And so we really built a team that's focused on this every day of every week to make sure that we do not compete with the transition and all of the tasks that are included in it. So it brings about 450 new employees into DWS. They've got budget challenges that we're beginning to understand a bit better. It will be helpful when we can extricate them out of USOE. We have this USBE now. Extricate them, college them out of there into DWS, because then we'll have a clear line of sight into their budget woes. We have a general idea of what went wrong and why. Their opportunity in the short and long term to fix those can take a bit of time, but once we have them over here effective October 1, it will be something that will be our top priority is to try to figure out the budget issues. They have a gigantic waiting list. They call it order of selection. At one point, there were 3,900 people on a waiting list to get services, and they're in different categories of disability. So they're starting to release some of those now, which is a positive sign that they're starting to cost contain their budget. So they've released several hundred over the last several months off that waiting list. It's one of the main priorities for us to get people service that they need. And they're just on a waiting list, they're not getting service necessarily. So we're trying to figure out how to utilize workforce service funding streams to offset that until they can come off the waiting list. So the organization is structured in a way that their biggest division within USOR is Voc Rehab, providing a chain of employment services for people with disabilities. And they've got got the blind and visually impaired center, they've got the deaf and hard of hearing folks, and then they've got an organization called Disability Determination Services, which does eligibility for people that are pursuing Social Security disability. We've got about 125 people in that shop. So just quickly organize the transition team, a team of brilliant minds on both the USOR side and the DWS side. Had a deliverable of June 1st to create a transition plan. That was part of the legislation. The department created a transition plan that encompasses all the key components of that. And so, we executed on that. We felt like we went above and beyond. Maybe Stephen can comment on that. I feel like we went above and beyond what was expected of us. I usually wait for telephone calls with questions from legislators, and I didn't get a single call. So that's always a good sign that either they reviewed it and feel good, or maybe they haven't reviewed it at all. But feel good about it. We update our plan every 2 weeks. So we try to create a real transparent process through the transition. So really multiple meetings and visits with advocates and people that are concerned with change and moves and that kind of thing. I have 72 visits total to do in between when this first became law, and I will finish on October 4th. I finished my 49th yesterday, and the visits have really been to visit with the DWS staff to explain why this is happening, more change for us, and I think in good ways, and also with all the USOR offices. So I've been out and about, and I'll hit all of Utah County next week, and systematically through the next couple months, have a good visit with all the staff. Surprisingly, the USOR staff are just happy to have a home. Somebody that wants them. If you follow this at all, the State Board of Education voted USOR kind of off the island. People don't have oversight of them any longer. And so it's a matter of where do they best fit, and that was a good discussion and debate with the legislature. Ultimately, they decided through some audits and some discussion throughout the legislative session that it fits well with us. And I was one that was willing to take it on if I was asked to. And so we've been working really hard at this for the entire summer. And literally, it's a very heavy lift with all the tasks and details that occur in a merger and transition. So continuity of service is clean for customers, clients, and staff get what they need on October 1st. When they flip on the lights, they don't see a difference. Besides, they get a check from all four services now. Have a different management structure. So they'll come over as another division of workforce services, like you're familiar with workforce development and UI and our eligibility services division and housing and community development. They'll be a division of Utah State Office of Rehabilitation. So try to keep their brand intact and make the transition a little cleaner as an organization for them as well. So, now, that's probably the biggest thing that's going on and consumes a lot of my time. I'm happy to answer any questions about what that is all about or fits nicely with our mission, I believe. Helping people find employment, get trained and find employment with disabilities is something that I think fits well. I go back 25 years now, it's unbelievable. And originally in 1997, that was one of the organizations that was supposed to be a part of Workforce Services when it was created. For whatever reason, my guess was probably the pinpoint accurate on why at this point. It didn't happen, so I think it's a great opportunity for us to further our mission and work closely with these programs and, quite honestly, get better at serving people with disabilities. And we have a little bit of a footprint on serving people with disabilities, but that obviously grows with the extent of having USOR come into our organization. So we want to do a really great job, as you know, for me. And so we'll continue to work with that team there and try to make good decisions for both the employees and the clients. So
you have 491 new...
That's like 450, something like that.
So somewhere along the lines, you didn't have to do a lot of juggling. You just found...
They had to reduce by 50 employees to start to get their budget in check. Mm-hmm. They did most of that through attrition. when this was first coming to life that this may be something that's going to be my responsibility to take on, that 14 remained. And those 14 were given notices that their jobs would end on June 30th, and I told Darren Brush, who's the executive there now, absolutely not. We will find 14 positions at Workforce Services for those employees so they don't get laid off from USOR, so we place all 14 of those in vacancies at DWS. So they shrunk that organization by 50, and I think there's some opportunity to look at structure and things later on, but my value is staying. But we want to get their budget in a position where it's the good spot and maybe move forward. So we got a lot of work to do, but a lot of work has already been done on it, and we're in a good spot right now in regards to the transition. So I don't expect any hiccups between now and October 1st. That's the biggest. There are a lot of other things I can talk about, but I don't know about the miles, but a lot of windshield time, but a lot of great visits, and I've made this comment to many that I spoke to about this, and it's really been interesting, because I've been through a lot of transitions in 25 years, and they're not always friendly. There are a lot of complaints, a lot of concern, a lot of this, that, and the other. I was expecting that in 72 visits and the entire soul at the end, but they have welcomed me more than I've ever imagined. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm out there to welcome them to this department. I feel like they're welcoming me. I mean, that kind of a reception from the employees. You know, just very kind, accommodating, enthusiastic, ready for a fresh start, know that they've had problems in the past. I'm happy to be with an organization that I think is well respected. And so I've got that kind of reception, and it's been really great. Just to interact with them, get to know them better, and answer their questions and reassure them that everything's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. So, that's what I've been up to.
I think that speaks to all of the quality of people that we have. I'm not sure that most people in the state of Utah realize how lucky we are, but we've got the quality and the dedication and the kind of folks we have that are running this out there. You know, the DWS and that long leadership there, and have to do that for each other. I've not, and it's kind of what you guys are known for. And you have received award after award after award from this division and others. So, frankly, it doesn't surprise me a whole lot that it can be awkward, it can be bad. It has to not be that way. That says a lot. So, in some ways, I think you're very fortunate because you have 450 new colleagues that will help us be better.
Yeah.
So the companies that are already there, but we're really lucky to take that and the people that we've got that are growing it out every day to make us all better.
Thank you.
Any questions about that? How much time do I have? Any other points of interest to you may have been following. We're right in the middle of the homelessness stuff, the international poverty stuff. I mean, I could list multiple things that we could talk about, but maybe save that for our next meeting. But just know that this department's fully engaged in a lot of real important issues of the state right now. We want to make a significant contribution in those in ways that we can with the testing programs that we run. So know that we're full steam ahead and fully engaged in a lot of activities that we think are important to the state.
Were you in the process of converting the new data system?
Yeah, we did that. That's done.
Yeah, I
think you're referring to EREF. That was implemented several years back. I thought it was done fine. And I'll always need to upgrade and things like this. Smooth implementation. The greatest fear I think we had is that people didn't get their benefits on the day that they were supposed to get them and all that work. Of course, it's a huge learning curve with staffing and change systems, and we did a lot of training and all that preparation for it. But it went, behind the scenes, it was a lot of work, but for people on the outside just looking at it, it's probably was pretty simple. So, yeah, we're done with that one. We don't have a new large project in the works. Some of what Michelle working on in UI are
enhancements to the systems there, but we're in a good spot. I can just tell you that as an organization. So.
Thank you for your work.
Yes, my pleasure. How are we all doing?
And thank you for facilitating those conversations with Rehab. I actually had the opportunity to go out to West Valley yesterday and meet with their Voc Rehab staff, and it's fantastic to, it's nothing new, but it's always nice to meet those professionals. When individuals file for unemployment, generally they have to, you know, search for work and make them four contacts each week. However, if there's an approved schooling program, then we'll allow them to focus on completing that schooling program rather than doing the work for contacts. So we have a lot of crossover with individuals that are attending school through Voc Rehab that may have that reason to apply to history with all of them in front of us. So it's always great to share contact information. And now that we're colleagues within DWS, it's all the better to say, if you've got an issue, if you've got a customer, you know, here's my key to benefits, here's my key to contribution, I'm going to address right now. All right, status update. So, yes, I am pleased that we are not quite as large as the e-revenue version. Within the UI system, we do have our own modernization of our benefit system. It's a project that we started in 2013. We're expecting to complete it by June of 2018. And we've had conversations with the council before about this modernization fund that's currently located within the unemployment trust fund. It was awarded to us because we modernized the part of our system during the recession. I want to say about $23 million. It lives in our trust fund, but it's not of our trust fund. So if our trust fund balance ever got too low, we can start using it to pay benefits. Otherwise, we can have the legislature appropriate it for other needs to modernize the program. So in the last few sessions, we've actually had them take $2 million from that towards upgrading our fund. It's exciting to see now that we are 3 years into this system, we're starting to recognize the rewards in our workload. So now we can allow employers the opportunity to respond to some of our requests for information electronically. When we get fully integrated to the .NET environment, then if I need to make an update to my system, whether I do it to my website or I do it to my application that staff are using, exact same thing with programmers. And it takes just a few minutes to roll out the release. Whereas right now I've got two different teams of developers, and usually we have to do it overnight for the don't shut down operation. So I'll just be a lot more agile. So that's moving along well. It is important to note that this modernization fund that lives within the trust fund, it doesn't impact employer contribution rates. So if we use it for these modernization efforts, it's not going to impact the housing fund for employers. Debt collection information. So I know this is something that historically the council has been interested in, and we do have a handout in here in a minute. And this basically goes to show that we continue to have debt collectors contact us to provide employment information. It started in 2013. Last year, we're asking about 750 requests per month. In order for a private debt collection agency to request this information, they have to go to a judge, they have to get a court order, they have to have a signed memorandum of understanding with our department, and then they submit that request with a $15 fee. And we use that fee to fund the administration and process and use that request. So I know in the past, the council has been concerned about the security of that data and sharing it with debt collection agencies. Last December, we rolled out a security review form where anybody that had an active memorandum of understanding with us had to complete a form that certified that they were protecting the confidentiality of our data. And if they didn't turn that back in, then we would stop sending in the written and stop responding to their request. That seems to have gone well. One thing that we've had on our radar that we wanted to do is start doing some on-site audits. So some of the debt collection agencies are requesting a lot of information. We actually want to send somebody out there to look at their computers, look at their files, make sure that they're in compliance with what they need to do in the programs of understanding. We have just hired an internal auditor to process those requests. So the plan is that over the next 4 to 5 months, he's going to be getting up to speed with the memorandum of understanding and developing a process for how to verify that there is compliance both on the technology side and on our employees at the debt collection agencies that are getting sensitive employment information that was shared by employers, were they background checked? Do they have a safe and secure workstation? So she's going to be developing a process for that through the end of the year, and then we expect come January and February, she'll actually go out and start doing the on-site reviews with some of the debt collection agencies. And that will be completely funded by the fees that's being charged for the process. Another topic that's been kind of a hot topic for the advisory council was our sharing of information with the Department of Labor Wage and Hour Division. This was passed in the legislative session 2 years ago, and I am happy to say that as of July 2016, we have executed the November emergency. that was quite a feat. I know the council was very interested in making sure that we had checks and balances in place with the sharing of information with the federal agency. So in your folder, we also get a copy of the memorandum of understanding. As of right now, we have not shared any information. I expect the first one will go out in September. The kind of checks and balances are noted on page 4 of the MOU. It lists out some of the requirements. So we're only going to share employer information if the employer is actually subject to the Employment Security Act. So you'll know that there's agricultural employers that don't meet that threshold and having to pay them an insurance contribution. So those would be within the scope of information we share. We are only going to share it with the Wage and Hour Division. And the Wage and Hour Division will use it to do targeted audits on the Fair Labor and Standards Act and child labor laws that they oversee. And the MOU requires that they not be sharing data with any other entity. So I know that was considered a council and the legislature before about making sure they control the confidentiality of this information in place. I do think it's quite interesting. In the last about 9 months, we have identified 92 employers that have misclassified more than 10 workers. And that's across the state. That's just our normal build-out process. One of the negotiations in coming up with this legislation is we wanted to isolate the employers that really were complying. If an employer had made a mistake and they didn't understand how to correctly classify between an employee and a contractor, then we didn't want to include them in the scope of this information sharing. So of the 92 companies, there are only 5 that have found 2 companies compliance with unemployment insurance. So the remainder of them, we conducted an audit on them, we found that they had misclassified more than 10 workers, we went ahead and corrected that, we had them report the wages, pay their contributions, and there's only 5 remaining that are still out of compliance with us. So I think that speaks to the good record that we're already required to get accepting them. Well, I want to take a few moments for Mike Miller. He is my chief of contributions. To give us an update on House Bill 96 from this last legislative session.
Thank you. So good afternoon. Kathleen, there's another slide if you want to. So House Bill 96, we know that as the single sign-on business data database. And next slide, Kathleen. Real high-level overview. Michelle said I have 3 minutes, so I'll let you know some good time. This was introduced by Representative Cutler and sponsored by Senator Shiozawa. And like next slide has all the information on the rules. The approach that they talked about is simply, if you imagine a wagon wheel, a center hub, and spokes going out, the goal is to create a database where all of these different state agencies report or share information, is gathered, collected, collated, whatever you want to say, and then an employer will be able to log on to one website and see all that data. So that employer would be logging into the hub, seeing information that's fed in by the spokes, through the spokes, from all the different entities. So currently, if an employer wants to know their unemployment tax rate, they have to know their either the federal ID number or their state identification number, they've got to remember their PIN for a power system. If they want to talk to workers' compensation or communicate with them online, get information, they've got to know the same kind of types of information there. Same thing for the tax commission, same thing for the office, et cetera. This is meant to pull all that information together. So the bill basically requires three things. One, create a database. Two, create a single sign-on web portal. And number three, report on the prototype this coming November. Pretty quick turnaround time frame. I did send my one of my IT folks to a meeting, and there's so much groundwork to report that it's just massive. So that's why we're going to keep it at the highest. Even the individual agencies that are required by the legislation to participate. So these are the folks of the will. We've got Commerce, the Tax Commission, the Labor Commission, our agency, Department, Gombe, Governor's Office of Management and Budget, Utah League of Cities and Towns, as well as the Association of Counties and the business community. So this is meant to be a business-friendly approach to try to help employers simplify their lifestyle as they deal with regulators and bureaucrats. It's interesting, at the very end of the bill, there is some language and verbiage that even though the prototype is specific to meeting the needs of employers at this time, they're leaving the door open to the development of this prototype that it will also potentially meet the needs of each one of us as individuals. So that means Mike Miller could log on to the website and see all the data that government's collected in the state of Utah about Mike Miller and his reported. So I could go to the Tax Commission, I could go to Workforce Services. If I had a contractor's license, I could go and check out my status with that division. I could check out all these things. But the initial phase is to support the employer community. Michelle, anything else?
No, I think for context, we have about 78,000 employers that are contacting my shop every 3 months to file their quarterly wage report. And so based on how this is going to develop, we would have a very vested interest in making sure that
and of that, about 78,000, about almost 90% of them communicate with us online. So they upload their information online, and they do that all on their own time frame from the comfort of their own business rather than paperwork and the business. So we do have some concerns. We want to make sure that everything is safe and secure. And the department has more serious issues about paying for their office. Any questions from the group on this? Okay, thank you for your time.
Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. So just a couple things. This is the legislation that was passed at the federal level back in 2014 that essentially requires the states combine efforts in addressing workforce development in the state. So it's not just operating in government silos, but you're actually talking to your community partners, you're talking to your educational institutions and other government agencies to make sure that the workforce that we're training now is the workforce of the future economy and employers are a big part of that. A couple pieces where it hit UI. The final regulation was just published 2 weeks ago. So that's been a long time coming. There was a great pleasure of seeing 1,300 pages of proposed regulations, providing feedback and getting feedback from all the different states, having Department of Labor, Department of Education review that feedback, and then they do review the final product. So definitely a theme to come to this day.
I'll just add a couple thoughts on the wheel. So don't read the 1,300 page document. But it certainly forces collaboration between multiple agencies. And as you know, we're a highly integrated state in regards to how workforce services and all the programs that are under our purview. So for us, when the regulations came out, there are a few adjustments or suggested ideas as a part of the regulations that states take on. But we were in a really good position to implement that. Many of those program services are with our agency. And when I listen to my colleagues across the country, they're going through these same challenges as we did when we created workforce services in 1997, where not everybody was really willing to work with one another. They're in that spot. And now we're required to do a WEO estate plan, which shows that collaboration between multiple agencies and funders. So for us, I anticipate that over the next several years, as states continue to try to implement what's suggested in the regulation that we come to us to ask for advice. So,
and the two pieces that I think the council might be most interested in terms of how it impacts unemployment insurance, we've got the question of the employer. And we had talked about this in one of our previous meetings, that if an individual needs to file for unemployment benefits and they go to a local employment center, how can we make sure that they receive meaningful assistance to file that claim? And so part of that is, we saw mentioned in the workforce development plan, there's an operations committee. And the operations committee is including the employer perspective, the workforce perspective, and government agency perspective, community partners to say, what does an ideal employment center look like? And how are those referrals made? So when I walk into the employment center as an individual with very diverse needs, how can I be connected to the best programs to help me get a job, the best programs to help me become self-sufficient? So UI is, we are participating in our operations committee, and we are closely working with the workforce development division. Some states are requiring that unemployment insurance folks actually have a presence on the employment centers. You know, we did that prior to 1997, but we found that there was kind of a regional application of laws and rules that was difficult to be consistent when I had individuals deciding eligibility for benefits in different offices. And so we consolidated, and the way that we're approaching meaningful assistance is making sure that our colleagues at the employment center are familiar with our website, that they have a direct line of communication with the claimmakers. So if an escalated situation comes in, if a woman comes in, she's got her four children with her, and they're crying and they're hungry, and she just needs help and an answer right now, she would be able to talk to an employment counselor who could automatically connect with the claimmaker, and we could get her answer that she could go on her way. That was our preferred method rather than setting up a dedicated line that says if you go into an employment center, you push this button, you automatically get a claims taker above everybody else that's already waiting in the queue. So we wanted to make sure that there were avenues to handle those escalated situations while still treating everyone sort of an equal access to that claims taker. The other piece of the WIOA regulations, of course, are wage records. And when employers are reporting quarterly wages right now based on the Social Security number, name, and wages. And there's talk on the national stage, we've discussed it before with the council, of adding additional elements to those wage records, like occupational codes and hourly rates of pay. I believe it was a few meetings ago, we had our labor market director come and present on a survey that was done with Utah employers. So those conversations continue to happen on the national stage. As things develop, I look forward to keeping the council in the loop. If you, of course, hear anything in your industry or from your colleagues in other states, I really appreciate that feedback. So, all right, and so that is WIOA. We skip back to the end of the council appointments and decisions. Okay. John, thank you for agreeing to serve another 4-year term on the council.
Sure.
Appreciate your participation and your level of engagement. Dale Cox and Diane Lewis, and also from the Labor Center, and also agreed to serve as reappointment under 4 years. Jody McMillan, her term expires June 30th, and so we currently do have a public vacancy. If you have suggestions, let me know offline and we can examine that.
Well, any suggestions now, so she doesn't come to me asking. Do you guys have suggestions? I'm a public person that might be interested. If not, think about it and let us know.
What if you try to public guidelines for me?
Public guidelines. So it's fairly open. Basically, the statute requires that we have 5 representatives of employers, 5 representatives of employees, and then 5 public. And that's what I was prescriptive about.
Do you have a neighbor that you like?
Right. I was just kind of thinking, I'm trying to blank now, of Jeff Cardiesco.
I'm not sure who Jeff is.
Yesco?
Yeah, I don't know who Jeff is. I've got another name for a gentleman named Ryan Newcomb. He has contacted me about
serving on a board.
Okay, cool.
And he said, do you want boards or commission spots for us? And I said, no.
Well, let's look into Ryan's, do you about, do you have some contact, yeah? Okay. Yeah, he could have a couple of options, that's how it's helpful.
And the reason I said, it's Jeff Young, it's no one to come think about.
Yeah, that's Jeff Young.
Yeah, and he's got 1,000 employees, got 800 of them that are in the labor. He
would
need to see if I could start feeding my clients, and we're trying to create some type of training plan for welding and the specialty of the sign building, and he's very, I don't know, I'd be a secretary. I like an idea of someone who wants to be on the board. Well, there's two.
So, we have our next meeting scheduled for December 1st. The idea at that point is I'll be able to present on our finalized 2017 contribution rate, and also we will have an update on the figures for the modernization project that we're going through, so you know where we stand and how much we might be requesting appropriations for 2018. If there are other topics you'd like to hear on,
I'm able to end by me just expressing my appreciation for Michelle and the team all here. They continue to lead nationally in regards to one of the best managed unemployment insurance provisions in the country. And they're tasked quite a bit to do presentations and at a national level with NASLA, the professional organizations, as well as Congress and states and on and on. We're always being asked for us to share some of our secrets. And oftentimes they don't want to share their secrets, but we've been always open about what we've done to be as successful as we are. So the other states that, as you heard earlier, that are maybe struggling with their unemployment insurance program, can learn and be stronger. So my hat's off to the team and Michelle, for just continuing that excellent thing to kind of on the insurance program. So,
just one quick question. My wife and I were talking a couple of months back how things are going so well with two kids and grandkids. And so we just looked at each other and said, it's not like a month later, somebody might have been in the hospital, and another child says something about they're thinking about getting a divorce, and I'm like, oh my gosh, so are you looking at possible changes in the economy, are you planning to do in terms of contingency, or what's happening beyond
what we see here, because it looks so great. You know, it's just right. So absolutely, and I appreciate the reality check. What we're looking at is some of the challenges we have are lost institutional knowledge. I think that agencies, companies across the country are experiencing a retiring of those who are most experienced, and they've assured that they have a solid foundation for moving forward. So with my chief of contribution and benefits, we've been investing in training our staff to make sure that they understand the federal field partnership, that our management team is familiar with what is a federal requirement and where is their point for state flexibility. Why does Utah do things a certain way? Why do we have our trust fund formula set up so that it's indexed to our wages? So we've really taken an effort to invest in that institutional knowledge to make sure there's continuity. The other thing was that we actually tried a pilot last winter, and we're expecting to continue again this winter, is we see an increase in claims with construction cleaning off and national parks cleaning off during the winter months, and then rehiring at the end of the spring. And so historically, we've always hired staff seasonally. We'll have a group of people come in for about 4 or 5 months at a time, and then they'll leave or through attrition, we'll incorporate them into existing positions at the end of that season.
Take
summer off. All right. Wouldn't that be lovely? So last winter, we actually had a job sharing program where we had some of our integrity technicians. They were focused on what we call the benefit standard control units the majority of the year. And then during those winter months, they moved into our claim center to help out with the increased claim volume. And then at the end of that session, they moved back to the integrity function. The beauty of that is we get more well-rounded staff. So they start to see how the importance of the things that they gathered translates over to their job in promoting integrity. And also we can avoid having the seasonal hiring. So that was a great success, but we do realize that there's challenges in making a long-term sustainable program. So we're hoping to strengthen that this year. Having a healthy trust fund is key. Having a solid program with knowledgeable staff with a supportive advisory council and with strong support from our executive director's office helps establish us for that future success. And then it's up to us to make sure that we've got the flexibility to adapt and change to our circumstances.
Any other questions for yeah.
One last little quick one, maybe for December, where we're going to be a tutorial outside of the meeting. But I was thinking it'd be really interesting for me to have a better understanding of clients with recidivism and understanding utilizing unemployment and kind of understanding more holistically who's using unemployment benefits, what percentage of the total population is continually or chronically.
You've already added onto your list the two you mentioned, the homeless and the intergenerational.
I can talk about those if you want me to.
I just want to update on that.
Fascinating stuff.
Because it ties into several other organizations that I work with.
I'd be happy to cover it. Okay. Yeah. There's a lot going on there.
Yes, there is.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Appreciate everybody's participation. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep them with you.